And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the last 9 to noon show of the week, which is Fridays, of course. And we've a lovely show lined up for you. We're going to talk through some of the big stories of the day and the week in our review of the week in news. We have our guests joining us very shortly. A little later on, we've got That's Entertainment as well, where we'll ease our way into the weekend with more frivolous conversation. We want you involved in the chat, though. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Any emails to comments at highlandradio.com. And if it suits you, you can watch us on your smart TV or your Fire Stick on the YouTube channel. Search at Highland Radio. And of course, we're on X and Facebook as well. So who is with us today? John McAteer, editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune newspaper. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning, Greg.
Great to have you with us. Good. I'm feeling good. Thank you. Catherine Noon, lawyer and former Fine Gael senator. Catherine, great to have you on the show again. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. Very well,
and,
thank you.
And lastly, Lorraine Thompson, regional director of Donegal Youth Services. How are you getting on?
Not too bad, Greg. Good morning to you.
Good to have you with us. Right. I'll tell you, they know how to count votes in the Britain and Northern Ireland elections, don't they? It's all pretty much done and dusted at this stage, and that's even with a recount in East Derry. Sinn Féin's emerged as the largest party with 7 seats in the north, the same number it had going into the election. The DUP are in second with 5, down 3 from last time. The SDLP have held both of their seats in Foyle, not surprisingly, in Belfast South. Alliance, the UUP and the TUV have 1 seat each. The big story, perhaps, is the Paisley family. Well, they've held the North Antrim seat for more than 50 years, but that legacy came to an end with the victory of TUV leader Jim Allister in the Unionist heartland. And in fairness to Pat McCarty, he did suggest that that was a surprise that we should keep an eye out for. And so it happened. John, I'll start with you. Do you see any significance in these results?
Well, I mean, it's really a clean sweep for the Labour Party in the UK. What difference is going to make down the road, we don't know. They're still digesting it. There's about 6 or 7 seats, 410 to Labour. That was the exit poll at 10 o'clock last night, 1-3-1 to the Conservatives. They've fallen short of that by about 10. Lib Dems up 53 or 54, whatever it is, to 61. And I suppose we're listening to the election almost all of the night until about 4 o'clock this morning. It is, as you talked about, quick counting there, 72 votes in the first constituency in Houghton and Sunderland. We wouldn't have even had the boxes opened at that point, would we?
No, but he fleets between different places to secure the fastest voting. I can't recall his name, but he seems to be an expert in getting it done.
How they could ever have got an exit poll from 131 constituencies out of 40,000 spot on. They spent the entire day across all of those constituencies, and there is absolutely right. It's the biggest election victory in a way over 100 years, maybe a lot more than that. You wonder what that's going to mean. The Rwanda bill is going to be scrapped. Keir Starmer has promised to renegotiate some kind of a trade deal with the EU, a place that they never should have left the first day.
What about the Legacy Act? Do you think that will come back onto the table?
I think it will be forced onto the table. I think it will have to be forced onto the table with a Labour government. There's lots of other things out there in the long grass that will have to be forced onto the table, because the Conservatives have taken an awful trouncing last night, and they've lost about 250 seats. So, like, it's a clear message to Rishi Sunak that they've lost it, that they haven't been listening to the people. But it's also a clearer message to Keir Starmer that where the Conservatives have gone wrong, it's up to him now to put that right. He has an increase of 212 votes at least at this point. So he can do as he wishes.
The problem is, though, the British economy really perhaps doesn't have the headroom to make all the changes he might want to. I'll come back to you in a second, John. To you, Lorraine. I don't know, like 36% of 54% of the population, really. That's who backed Labour, and yet here we are. That's the system that they employ, though. And then you have this massive increase in reform support and it only really leads to four seats and what have you. It's a funny old way of doing it. I find it hard to get exciting because it doesn't really feel as democratic as perhaps it should.
Yeah, I think there's a whole debate about the process and how democratic it is. Obviously, we hear a lot about, you know, voter apathy, you know, trying to encourage young people to get into politics in terms of, you know, looking for a change. I think it's very evident, even what John said there, like people were looking for a change. You know, the Tories in power for so long had done like so much harm, maybe very little good. You know, we only have to look at systems like the NHS, and that impacts people on their everyday living. You know, when people can't get the healthcare that they need, family members, you know, sitting on wait lists, you know, for important surgeries and not getting them. So I think, you know, the promise of Brexit didn't really deliver, you know, in terms of immigration. Certainly we know that the numbers from the EU have fallen, but the numbers from elsewhere have skyrocketed in the UK. So I think the promises of the Tory government have fallen short so many times. And it's interesting then whenever you get a new party and they're all singing, all dancing, and they're going to deliver. But are they successful because of their own policies, or are they successful because there was just no other viable alternate party? So I think, yeah, some of the stuff, listen, I'm not au fait, I should say, with the UK politics. I'm only reading the headline news most of the time. Some of the feedback around Keir Starmer is not good. So yeah, I'm going to remain on the fence for a while to see, you know, obviously, you know, the people have spoken, they've spoken for a change, as John has said, they want to see change in their everyday lives, obviously in their everyday pockets. And, you know, that's no mean feat to deliver. It will take time.
Things are very, very tough in Britain. I don't think sometimes people in Ireland realise how tough they actually are. Catherine Noone, is it moving the deck chairs around, or do you think Keir Starmer will be able to deliver any significant impact for the British public?
Well, you hit the nail on the head there when you mentioned that the economy isn't exactly thriving, and that will curtail what he can do. So if he can put some measures in place to boost the economy somewhat, which obviously has been hugely impacted by Brexit, and like from an EU electoral point of view, Brexit hasn't gone away. You know, a lot of it goes back to that. The Reform Party, you know, have been around since then. And, you know, the Brexit issue definitely hasn't gone away. But one positive thing from an Irish perspective, I think, is that it will offer an opportunity to reset relations between Ireland and the UK. And I think Keir Starmer, going back to Lorraine's point, he's definitely not got a very high popularity rating as a leader. I think he's 51% of people in the UK, I heard someone say yesterday, you know, aren't that fond of him. I can't remember the language, but, you know, that he's not an overly popular leader. But he, in his favour, from our perspective, if we're to be typically Irish and looking at how it affects us, is that he does have more of an understanding and more of an interest in the Irish situation, for want of a better word, and relations between, I think, Ireland and the UK will improve somewhat, at least, as a result of the Labour Party coming into power.
Short term, it's interesting because, you know, that's what we can feel right now. But medium to long term, I think it's going to be particularly interesting. Nigel Farage, the leader of Reform, who only came really into the party and announced he was going to run recently, he says he's coming for Labour after being elected as an MP for the first time, that on his eighth attempt, believe it or not. But Catherine, I wonder really actually what this means for the Conservatives, because
I agree entirely. It's more about the Conservatives,
their identity, and what that party will be come the next election. I think Reform's going to paint them a little bit into a corner.
They'll be a thorn in the side of the Conservatives, and it's a much harder reach to see a normal, whatever the word normal means in this context, a normal Labour voter voting for Reform. You know, it's much more likely that they will have an impact on the Conservatives. And, you know, I wouldn't like to be the likely new leader of the Conservatives coming in with Nigel Farage in Parliament, even though they did get fewer seats than they might have wanted, or that perhaps the mood would have indicated might have materialised. I do think that Nigel Farage will find he will be a difficulty for Keir Starmer. But I think in real terms, in hardcore political terms, he'll have more of an impact on the Conservatives.
Yeah, John, I think Britain's heading towards the next election 4 or 5 years or perhaps even sooner, whereby we might see, you know, more extremes in the political spectrum battling it out. Labour versus a further right-leaning Conservatives, or an even, you know, further right-leaning and stronger Reform.
Yeah, but the Reform Party has been pretty much a failure in this election campaign. They've got a handful of seats. Farage, as you say, at his eighth attempt, I don't know if he'll even stay that long, because I don't think he has the great interest in doing it that he portrays. No, it's a strange election, because Keir Starmer... The election manifesto was as flat as anything I've ever seen, and just in the middle of the night, the Mick Lynch, the leader of the RMT, were describing it as a vanilla agenda. And despite being an ardent Labour supporter, he was highly critical. And it starts from there, because last night I've heard Keir Starmer described anything between a cardboard cutout and a wooden plank in his personality. And, you know, there's something in there that people can't warm very easily to Keir Starmer. He's not going to unite the people. He's not going to unite the country. And I don't think that's his intention. He's going to do it his own way, talking about sunlight of hope and all this PR nonsense that was probably written about a month ago. I mean, remember, we have an election of 46 billion people, and probably half of them voted. And what does that say for the UK? What does that, I think it was Catherine made that point earlier on, what does that say about a connect with politics, trust in politics? What does it say
it's
about...
It's not exclusive to there. We saw it here, and we're probably going to get a low turnout in the general election whenever that happens here. Just don't know who's voting, who cares, who doesn't care anymore, because, you know, as I say, this is 36% of 53.4% of the British population, and it's a clean sweep for Labour. That leaves an awful lot of people either that they didn't vote, they don't care, or they haven't got the party that they wanted, or they couldn't be bothered voting. I don't know what that says about politics and delivery and anything else, to be honest with you.
It's a very big country, the UK, and it's a very multicultural country these days. A lot of people just don't care to get on with their work. Just watching the campaign as I did whenever I could in the past months, people were just not going to be voting because they didn't see any purpose or any reason. And there's something wrong with the body politic itself and how it's delivered, if that is a general viewpoint, which it seems to be.
I don't know. Maybe it's something in the water, because I don't care about the Euros. I don't care about Wimbledon. I used to get excited for Wimbledon. I didn't even know it was on. I couldn't care less. And I really don't care about this election either. I don't know what's happening.
I don't know, though, that it's that they don't care. John, I feel like people can't see that they can make a difference, can't see that their vote would make a difference. You know, so when they've, you know, had the experience of politics to date, and like I said earlier, it's not making a difference in their day-to-day lives, I think they just can't see that connection. So, you know, it's like, oh, more of the same, or the best of a bad bunch.
Well, you know, what are our expectations of a government then? Like, is there an example of a government that I'm not an anorak on this, but is there an example of a government that came in and made life great for everyone and the health service worked? And like, what are our expectations of any government coming in to actually be able to achieve and for our lives?
God forbid, do their job, make decisions on policies that are going to impact people's lives for the better, make decisions on the spend that they have the opportunity to shape. And I'm talking in broad terms here. I'm not going to talk kind of parties or examples.
I get you, yeah.
But, you know, I think it's, to me, I mean, it's very basic. We're all, you know, trying to make a living. We're all trying to do our best. We're all trying to, you know, rear children in a country that's safe, you know, that has opportunities, you know. So I think those are very kind of basic principles of what we want from a government.
Okay.
But, I mean, they ring true no matter what country you're in. So, I mean, the spend is there. They have the access to the national budget, and they should make decisions, not based based on their own egos or their own agendas, but for the betterment of the people. So, like I said, things like the NHS is one service that impacts across, you know, the whole of the population. And that's just one example. You know, go into schools and to, you know, public services. You know, people want to access the services that they feel, you know, they're paying their taxes towards.
Okay.
And they want to make sure that they have that life.
Yeah, but like Catherine, is that what people are voting on? I mean, everything that obviously Lorraine is saying is true, but I don't know what they voted for on in Northern Ireland, for example. I consume quite a bit of media. I didn't hear the NHS mentioned. I didn't hear much mentioned. And dipping in and out of the commentary in the immediate run up to the British elections and post elections, it's not about the NHS or the cost of living, or some cost of living stuff, or infrastructure, or motorways, or power, or trains. All I'm hearing is immigration. Nigel Farage is that he's going to sort that out. The Tories now going to have to sort that out. I mean,
the reality is that one of the things that occupied a big part of the agenda in the middle of the night, way after 3 o'clock in the morning, was the need and the demand to build hundreds of thousands of what they call council houses.
Yeah.
And that hasn't been happening. And nobody had any answers to that. There's quite big panels across the different channels, but that was a very, very big topic of debate. And I think in reality, the last man who came up with the campaign to build big numbers of houses was Tony Blair in 1979. And they're in the same situation as we are. They have a health system that's banjacked, they have a housing system that's banjacked. And you have to ask, Fine Gael has been for 14 years.
Yeah, but is that why, right, we don't end up talking about that stuff? Because it's so complicated, so hard. No one really has a plan. Like, if you look at Sinn Féin and the government's plan in terms of fixing the health service, they've all signed up to Sláinte Care, haven't they? Housing, they're all promising to build a billion and 352,000 houses. Really, then, that all gets pushed to one side and we start talking about the really emotive stuff. And that seems to be what happened in Brexit, what happened in the elections most recently, and probably is going to set the tone for the election this October. Catherine, do you have an insight into that? And John, I'll come back to you.
Well, just to go back to a few of the points that were made there, I think there was more of a presidential style election in the UK. Like, the reason that the Lib Dems have done well is obviously because others weren't doing well. But also, you know, a lot of the highlight moments were just catchy kind of PR stunts, you know, for the leader. And I think Rishi Sunak went down badly. I think Keir Starmer, I think John's point about their manifesto being bland and their general offering being a bit, you know, opaque. It was really about the leaders. They've made huge gains, Labour have, but they haven't actually made a huge, which is a hard thing for us to understand with our PR system, but they haven't actually made huge gains in percentage terms. And then going back to Northern Ireland, I mean, as ever, Northern Ireland, you know, has the polarised politics that is quite different and quite unique that really only serves politicians over the decades. So it's very hard to compare, even though it is the one election, it's very hard to compare the reasons that people vote in the north of Ireland to the reason that they vote in the UK. And definitely immigration was a huge issue and something that, you know, Nigel Farage latched onto. But like John said, he didn't do half as well as he thought he might or as the poll seem to think that he might. So it's anyone's guess as to why people vote. And sorry, just a last point. I heard commentary this morning that the polls being so clearly a Labour landslide meant that even a lot of Labour voters didn't go out to vote. So you had ironically, the hardcore Conservative voters were probably more motivated to get out and vote, which might be a reason why they've done a bit better than the absolute disaster that was predicted of about 100 seats, where they're getting about 130, which is the worst of all time, I heard they were saying this morning on the radio as well. So it's anyone's guess why people vote. And I chatted to a friend yesterday who would be quite liberal, maybe centre fiscally, but socially liberal. And she had gone in and voted for AIM2. And I said, you know that they're quite pro-life and quite anti-choice. And she didn't realise that. So, you know, I've had friends say, I liked, your man is kind of good looking, so I voted for them. You know, I mean, people vote for all sorts of crazy reasons. And democracy is kind of fine until sometimes you chat to the average voter and it can give you a bit of a fright. You know?
All right, interesting. So, okay, yeah. We'll be back with more from our excellent panel after we take this break. Finance Minister Jack Chambers has insisted this year's early budget is not an indication the government will go to the polls in the autumn, despite both Minister Chambers and Taoiseach Simon Harris insisting yesterday the election will not be held until 2025. Speculation began to mount in Leinster House. Minister Chambers confirmed the budget will be held on October 1st. And again, more big receipts coming in to the Irish government, which will give them more latitude for a budget. Will it be a budget to buy an election, or is that really too cynical of me to say, Lorraine Thompson?
Not cynical. I think every budget in the election era is an opportunity to buy votes. And I think that governments normally at this stage try to get the balance of, you know, that to kind of give away peace, as well as the decisions based on spend and, you know, the intake of monies and stuff like that. But I think in this instance, there's some opportunities, as I mentioned earlier, in terms of the UK. Housing is a huge issue. It's a huge issue in Ireland. It has been. I don't know how long it has been now since we've had the kind of, you know, mass building of social housing, but it's housing has a huge impact on families in terms of poverty and the poverty cycle. It has a huge impact on young people and whether they decide to stay in this country. And we have mass immigration of young people. So I think that there's a huge opportunity in terms of getting the housing right.
I think in relation to that, Lorraine, though, I think really the public at this point will only be swayed in that regard on delivery and not promises.
Yes, yeah, so it's not about, for me anyway, it's not about building more social housing, but it's bringing in policies that maybe will prevent all of these vacant properties from sitting idle. You know, it's maybe giving incentives or disincentives for people to hold on to those vacant properties. So I think, I mean, it's obviously it's a very complex issue.
It is also to go after private property. It's not a vote winner.
It's not. No. So that's why there has to be financial incentives there. So I think there are, you know, policies that can be brought in that would incentivize people that are sitting with these properties to put them to better use.
John, a lot of things go into when you call an election. Isn't there, I suppose, the timing of a budget, the weather, public sentiment? You know, there's a lot of variables that make it the right time. When do you? I presume it's going to be in autumn, John.
I do, yeah. I presume it's also going to be that week before the time changes when we're driving with our headlights on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon at the end of October. Everything points to an early budget delivering an election within what 6-7 weeks. They can do it. The budget doesn't have to be sort of rushed through the Dáil to any great extent, because the budget is generally agreed and analysed and signed into law by the before Christmas time. When you look at the headline figures, that we're going to be spending $2 billion a week. The giveaways last year was just something over 11.3 billion or whatever. It's going to be 15 or 16 billion. People won't know what hit them when these checks start landing on their doorstep. I mean, the corporation tax is up 15%. They've stopped bothering cautioning the people that it might not be as good as it was in previous years. Pascal Donnelly spent 5 years trying to convince people not to have high expectations, because corporation tax is never going to be as high as it was the last year. Now it's 15 cent above where they expected it to be, and it's only the middle of the year. VAT, the collections from VAT is up 6% at 11 billion. And all of these headline figures, even income tax that we all pay, which we understood they were giving us a lot of it back, and that that was going to be nowhere near where it now is. It's up 7%. And, you know, all of the indicators are there that this is going to be the biggest giveaway budget for the last 50 or 60 years.
Is that what we want, though? I mean, like, we're going to have to take some responsibility here, aren't we, in that... Do we? I mean, obviously, you know, if people on a pension get more money, that's fine. There'll probably be changes to the inheritance tax and all that kind of stuff. But the bread and butter stuff, really, that we should be worried about is funding for, you know, local groups that provide invaluable services, the retention of an improvement of, you know, health services in the community that takes pressure off acute hospitals and things like that. But it's probably not going to be that. It's going to be five or six headlines. I don't know.
It's going to be about winning the election. At this point, I think every party is getting ready for the general election. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael will see an opportunity there. They're more popular than they thought they were, which is quite surprising even to themselves. And they're up there at 23% or thereabouts. They'll be looking at Sinn Féin. Where will Sinn Féin be at? Like in the Red Sea poll last week, they were up there just over 20%, 21%. 21% or thereabouts. It's going to be a very, very big battle there with Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Two of those parties will go into, back into government again, but two of those parties will not be able to make up a government on their own because they'll be probably under 40 seats each. Fianna Fáil could be substantially under 40 seats. They might have 75 seats, so they're going to be 14 or 15 short. Is that enough to take Sinn Féin on board? Or is it enough to entice Sinn Féin to become part of a new government? Or can they make it up through the Labour Party, through the Green Party? Like, there's been big, big changes there. You have new leadership across a number of parties. And will we have a change of leadership in Sinn Féin? That's one of the questions that's going to be mulled over the summer, because Sinn Féin's fortunes have been declining very, very badly and inexplicably to a great extent.
It is kind of interesting because really in a different environment or maybe with a different party, I don't know, sort of the slipping in the polls from a real high and also the relatively poor showing in the local elections would put, you know, a leader under a bit of pressure heading into a key election where whatever appetite for change is left really needs to be jumped on. Catherine, what's your assessment of it all?
Well, I think Sinn Féin did a lot more poorly in the local elections than people anticipated. And I don't know if that will necessarily be reflected in the general election. The general election is a very different beast. I mean, you need to be living someplace like Russia or China or one of these dictatorships to have more than four or five terms in government. You know, so there is that incumbency factor and the fact that it's, you know, the government has been in power. Fine Gael in particular have been in power for a very long period of time now. It's hard to fight against that. Mm-hmm. You know, change isn't a policy, you know, and all I heard during the local elections, oh, vote for change. I mean, what does that mean exactly? You know, I despair when I hear people going on like that. But in reality, there will be there'll be an election, I would think, in October, November. I don't, you know, I know the Taoiseach is saying that it won't be and that they'll go full term. And I heard Micheál Martin say the same thing this morning. But the reality is they can't really admit that there's going to be an election.
Because that automatically triggers the campaign,
doesn't it?
They're
sitting ducks then, you know. So, I think there will be an election. I think it'll be interesting to see how Sinn Féin goes. I think momentum is a great thing for a political party to have coming towards an election. And they certainly don't have that. So it'll be interesting to see how the campaign goes. I think Simon Harris, you know, he did say he was going to bring energy to Fine Gael, and I think he has done that. And I think Leo Varadkar made the right decision in standing down when he did. So I think for any failings that there are there, that was definitely smart.
Yeah. Just to your point, yeah. I think it's 45% of people around that will vote for an individual or a party in a local election,
yes.
And then different in the general elections because it's the individual or it's the local area or whatever. So yeah, you're very correct in that regard, of course, as always. It is quite interesting, as you say, about momentum. Lorraine, you were nodding there about, you know, that Simon Harris has brought new energy to Fine Gael. There's a lot of people in this country doing all right. Do you know, like, I mean, obviously we often talk about the more marginalised and deprived, and they are a cohort, unfortunately, perhaps less likely to vote in a general election. But there are also a lot of people that are doing okay and maybe have relatives in Britain or what have you, and they hear what it's like over there. So, you know, it does potentially bode well for Fine Gael in particular.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you know, Catherine was talking about there, you know, voting for change and what does that mean? Our human nature is to kind of pull the negatives to the front of our brains, you know, instead of focusing on the positives. And, you know, when we get into discussions around politics, it's very easy to say what's not happening and what should be happening. And I think going back to, you know, the whole debate around immigration, there's a lot of fear in people's heads about, you know, others coming in and taking what is rightfully ours. So I see a lot of politics based on
that.
But
nothing has been done to counter that argument. I mean, there are statistics to back up that, you know, things aren't, you know, in terms of violence trends, different housing for different types of people. Nothing's done to sort of counter that. It's just left there to sort of sit out there and be capitalised on, which I find quite interesting.
Yeah, well, there would be, you know, community groups and that would be trying to, you know, balance that narrative quite a lot. But maybe it's not enough. It maybe needs to come from a higher level. But so there is that kind of human nature fear around, you know, well, God, we've a great wee country here and sure we have, you know, our own to look after, so we don't be needing anybody else. It's grand, they're in a bad way. God loves them. You know, we'll look after them for a wee while and then we'll send them back. But we need to hold on to our own, you know, purse strings. I do think, yes, in terms of politics, obviously being from Donegal, being so far removed, you know, the fact that we really struggle here in terms of our socioeconomic demographics. We're always flying the flag with our Oireachtas members to make sure that we're not forgotten about, that our agenda is heard. So I kind of always have a view on, you know, what our politicians can do in Dublin, because it just maybe Donegal seems a wee bit far away from them sometimes. But by and large, they're very accessible. For me, anyway, working in the community voluntary sector, when we need to have discussions with them around young people and the needs of young people, I find that they're very accessible. What they can do for us is a whole other conversation and the bigger picture, but they can certainly champion the issues.
John, I'm not a political advisor, but just to Catherine's point on the word change, coming up to this election, I think Sinn Féin certainly should keep that word out of their mouth, because the change they're competing with, you know, rural alliances, different parties that are coming through, ain't due. You know what I mean? If you're going to stick, you're going to stick with Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. And if they keep talking about change, there's the pool of voters that they're going to be sort of sharing, a pool of candidates going to be sharing that change with. They really need to come up with a very clear and articulate message that it's them, not this sort of change word, because I think it's really going to be...
You know something, the local elections proved an awful lot of things, despite the fact that they were only a local elections, and they do count in the greater order, no matter what you say about it. The reality here is there was no far right. That was a figment of social media. A handful of people were driving social media. They were individuals rather than campaigners. Social media, I think campaigners out on doorsteps found that social media was not resonating very much at all with the public. But leaving that aside, change for the sake of change, I suppose, is never going to work. But we do need change, given that you have the same government there one way or the other for the past 14 years. We're talking earlier that the Conservatives were in power for far too long in the UK, and of course they were, because that length of time tends to breed complacency, and they tend to retreat into a bubble to defend their positions and to win the next general election. Are we in that same position here? I suspect we are, because Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have it within their grasp. They have made some subtle changes, especially in Fianna Fáil, with Jack Chambers as the new finance minister. They've become very adept at managing issues rather than solving problems, and that applies in housing and health. We're just managing people's expectations that we're doing really well. We're managing people's expectations that we're putting another couple of hundred 1,000 into this particular service in Galway or in Dublin or somewhere in the health service. And all the while, things are getting worse and worse and worse. And that's not going to change. Mm. Now, it's going to take a new government with different thinking, at least 5 years to change anything, to build houses. I mean, we should be building houses at a rate of knots that we were doing in 2006 when we were able to build 93,000. There's no reason that we can't do that again. But all we're getting is a whole pile of lame duck excuses that we don't have the workers, that we don't have the resources. The problem is that we don't have a government that has the interest in doing it, and that's how I see it.
All right, so others would see it differently. And I suppose, too, when you talk about voting for change, a lot of people thought they would vote Independent Ireland for change. You know, the high-profile candidates, the likes of Kieran Mullooly and others, mm-hmm. and they feel somewhat let down their supporters now because they've decided to join the Renew group in Europe, which would appear to be, some would say, opposite to what they promised in the election, which I don't think helps independence at all, that type of stuff. Right, we'll be back with more from our panel. They are Lorraine Thompson, who is Regional Director of Donegal Youth Services, Catherine Noon, a lawyer and a former Fine Gael senator, and John McAteer, the editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune, after these. Just a quick one on the United States situation. US President Joe Biden has said he screwed up in last week's election debate, has vowed to fight on. He said he fell asleep, and nearly fell asleep because of jet lag, but that jet lag was from 2 weeks ago. Following the debate, Mr. Biden said he intended to defeat Republican rival Donald Trump in the November presidential election. He gave no sign that he was considering dropping out, but maybe the planes are circling. Speculation continues that he will in fact be replaced. Can you see him contesting the presidential election later this year? It was a tough watch, Catherine. I took no pleasure in it. I take no pleasure in seeing sort of someone, you know, so publicly unravel.
Yeah, it was really sad. And, you know, Joe Biden, the main thing people, you know, his nickname in the States is Sleepy Joe and, you know, all of that. But he is fundamentally a decent man. He is very much the establishment politician. He's been around forever. But there's a decency about him. And I think it's very sad to see a decent man so publicly humiliate himself in a way. And then again, such a Yeah, I don't even know what words to use. I've heard all sorts of other kind of phrases to describe Donald Trump. But ultimately, you know, a buffoon is what he is. And he's the one who comes out of that particular debate looking like the more credible choice for president. You know, that in itself is quite depressing. And, you know, to think that in the States, you know, that these two gentlemen are the best that they can come up with the population they have. It's just, it blows my mind that this is the situation that America is in. And it's just really sad. And it bowls really badly for the future of the States. That said, just to go back to your point about someone else potentially taking over, there's a lot of talk at the moment, but it's a difficult thing. It's only happened once before when a president was indicted, you know, that a sitting incumbent wouldn't be the choice for the particular party. So Kamala Harris, you know, I do think that there's a big problem with women in politics in the States. And I think one of the huge reasons that Hillary didn't get elected was because she was female. Everyone may not agree with that, but I do think that that was a large part of it. You know,
but Catherine, is I thought the plan was that Joe Biden gets elected, Kamala Harris comes in, and then they spend much of the term increasing her stock, and then she'd be a natural predecessor. So you'd work on the public attitude to maybe a woman being in politics. Do you know what
For
I mean?
For sure.
And now she might be parachuted in now. Her stock is rising somewhat. But strategically, that didn't make a great deal of sense to me.
Yeah, well, I suppose it is a strategy that makes some sense when you think that the reason that they ran Joe Biden the last time was because he did have that recognition. He was a household name. He is a household name, obviously, and that he could beat Donald Trump. And indeed, he did beat Donald Trump. So that strategy did work. And you'd imagine the strategy of having a younger female you know, vice president who could potentially take over. That in itself is a decent strategy, but I don't think it's in Joe Biden's nature to stand by and let somebody else take over from him. That's what's being said by a lot of Democrats. But that said, I think he will come under a lot of pressure. I don't think Kamala Harris is as popular as they thought she might be. You're right to say that her stock has improved a bit, but as to whether it's high enough to actually get her elected, you know, in the United States is another question. And if there had been a female who somehow, you know, did do better in that space over the last number of years, well, then, you know, it would have been a good strategy, I think, you know, but I don't think she's as popular. You know, I have a lot of friends in the Democratic Party in the States, and really she's just not so popular as an individual in the party for a start, you know, which doesn't help.
Yeah. All right. It is going to be interesting because obviously it was the Democrats pushed for this early debate. I don't know if they saw that as a test of Mr. Biden or not, but there's a lot to come between now and then. A lot of interviews, a lot of public appearances, you know, there's further debates. And as it is now, if he does not knock all of them out of the park, I don't think there's any chance of beating Donald Trump, whereas Kamala Harris might have a slightly greater chance or by losing by a lesser margin. Lorraine Thompson, what's your assessment of it?
I think he's holding on with his fingernails at this stage, to be honest. I also think, like, America, is this the best you can do, Biden and Trump? I was in America in March. I had the fortunate opportunity with the International Fund for Ireland. They took us to Boston for a week to visit peace-building organisations and then to DC for a week. And I was able to, you know, kind of tune in a wee bit more to what's happening over there. And we were watching, I think it was the State of the Nation. And Biden kind of flustered and stuttered his way through that as well. So it's no big shock to me, you know, that this one was, I mean, obviously this one was a lot worse. I don't understand, as I say, you know, a country the size of America, the phenomenal women that I met over there who are like advisors to politicians. I mean, they were such powerhouses. To be sitting with these two options at this stage just blows my mind. I always really liked Biden in terms of his acumen when he came into power. I've dramatically changed my mind on that with his actions around Palestine, and for a man who's so informed, so intellectual, you know, has such a political prowess, I just can't understand how he has allowed that to continue. I'm also wondering, like, where's Michelle Obama in this? I mean, she's phenomenal. She's well-known. She's amazing. A powerhouse. She would be amazing. So I think there are better options, and I'm really struggling with the two that are on the table. I'm not even going to go there with Trump at this stage. I mean, Catherine, you nailed it. It was shocking that he got elected the first time. It's shocking that he's still there, and it's shocking that he's a possible.
But 73% of the American public favour him over Biden. I mean, that's
he
can't be that big a buffoon, or he can't. Well, I just wonder in terms of women's representations in politics and all the other stuff that we talk about in the media, if we're in some sort of an echo chamber or bubble that's not representative of across the entire population. Because obviously they know that they don't have a chance of putting a woman in front of your average Joe and Josephine and getting them elected. You know, and they're not discussing it on the basis of how well they're known or what they might achieve. Maybe they just know that the public aren't ready for that because things... I don't know. John, what's your view, please?
My view would be very straightforward.
Good.
The Democrats have two huge problems. One of them is Joe Biden, who's not fit for purpose. Let's be realistic. The election is 5 months out. Joe Biden hasn't come under any real pressure just yet, but he will do come the end of July into August. And their second problem is Kamala Harris. She's almost indispensable for one reason. Joe Biden has amassed a treasure chest of billions of dollars. As the vice president, she's the only one that those funds can transfer to automatically. In fact, the election could be over and done with before any other candidate could get access to those funds, either to a legal process or to a long, lengthy period of negotiation. That's their huge problem at this point, that Kamala Harris has been pushed out there, but we're not being told the actual reason for that. It's all to do with the multi-billion euros that they're going to spend. Biden has that in his war chest. It's his alone to deal with. And insofar as the election is concerned, as everybody else has said, it's quite amazing that in a country of 330 million people that they've ended up with these two candidates. I don't think either of the two of them represent America as a visionary, energetic country that that is to the forefront in world leadership and democracy. It's incredible to think Biden has handled the issue in the Middle East absolutely shocking. He has allowed Israel off the hook on every occasion, and God only knows how much murder and mayhem and disaster that they have created in there, because they're inside a massive camp where nobody else can get in there.
Yeah.
Biden has turned a blind eye to that. He has made the odd, a pertinent remark that sells to some Americans. But
in reality, we've all, I'm not speaking collectively for us, but we've all kind of turned a blind eye as if all of that stuff has stopped, yet it continues every single day and night as we speak.
It's so strange. The public attention span is very, very short. When the Ukraine war broke out, people were glued to CNN for about a week without ever going to bed. They've forgotten all about that now. It was the same in Gaza for a month. The agenda has moved on to other things.
Actually, just in relation to that, I listened to an interview from Vladimir Zelensky yesterday, where he said that Donald Trump should actually now state what his plan and policy is if elected for Ukraine, so they can actually start making plans for the war if
we're elected.
Yeah, exactly. Interesting. Listen, unfortunately, I have to leave it there. Catherine, as always, go ahead.
Could I mention a meeting on Monday in Fawn, if you don't mind? It's just a local issue. We've come from the American election to a local issue, but you were kind enough to mention this issue during the week on the radio, but Fawn Health Centre has been closed and the nurse taken away from there. And there's a public meeting next Monday evening at 7 p.m. in Fowler Hall in Toobin. So I would encourage anyone, it's a very large catchment area, so sorry to take advantage of just the opportunity, but just to get that out there.
No, and we were going to discuss that later. And if you can't attend it,
yeah,
no, that's fine. If you can't attend it, you're being asked actually to send in your concerns so they're represented. We'll talk about that a little later on, quite rightly so.
Okay, thanks for covering that. Greg.
No problem. Listen. It's perfectly fine. I thought you can plug your book the next time or anything. It's fine. All right, thanks very much indeed, Catherine. Take care of yourself. Lorraine Thompson, lovely as always. God bless you. Have a great weekend. John McAteer, have a goodie. Thanks for your time as always.
Thanks, Greg.
Bye-bye, John. All right, 9 till noon show, 1 hour in, another hour to go. Stay where you are, another 2 hours to go, in fact.